Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I'll tell you, with Ricky, it was a dream. I didn't want to be Ricky's manager. It just happened. And when I fully became his manager, I thought, okay, now we have to basically make Ricky the global icon that he was back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, because I started managing him in 2004. I was there till 2014. So the first thing we did was an Unplugged. We kind of re-engineered everything, and we worked with Jose Tillan and the folks at MTV and did an Unplugged. And that basically solidified Ricky's iconic, you know, stature globally, right? Same thing with CAA. It was like, okay, how do we convince the agency and the general market that there is something real, something viable here in music, music touring, brands, television, film, books, you know, sports and everything else? It's always been my role to be the ambassador or the bridge between both worlds. I always say I'm the bridge between the Anglo world and the Latin world. Anglo's going to the Latin world and Latin's coming into the Anglo world. So, soy el puente.
Welcome to Latin Hitmaker, the Billboard podcast that tells the fascinating stories of the executives behind the greatest Latin artists and the hits that are the soundtracks to our lives. I'm Leila Cobo. Hoy hablamos con Bruno del Granado, perhaps Latin music's best-known agent, repping artists like Ricky Martin, Gloria Estefan, Maluma. But Bruno never dreamed of being an agent. You can't see him here, but trust me when I say the guy looks like an actor or a debonair TV presenter. And that is exactly what he used to be. Bruno was a host at MTV for years, but one thing led to another, and he ended up heading Madonna's Latin label, Maverick Latino, in the early 2000s. From there, Bruno went into management, managing Ricky Martin's career, and for the past nearly a decade, he's been an agent at CAA. And his journey started with a song.
Stuck inside these four walls. Sent inside forever. Never seeing no one.
So Band on the Run, Paul McCartney and Wings. Why Band on the Run?
Leila, that was the first single I remember buying with my own money, with my allowance money. You know, I listened to music. I grew up around music, mostly Spanish language music. But the first time I remember physically going into a record store and putting my allowance money on the counter was for the single Band on the Run, because I'd heard it so much. And every time I listened to the song, I am taken back to, you know, 40 something years ago when I first heard that song, and I thought it needs to be mine. I need to own that song. And it's still one of my favorite Paul McCartney songs, and one of my favorite songs of all time, by the way, because it was the first one I actually bought. Since then, I've bought thousands of albums, cassettes, and obviously now downloads and everything else. But that, the first, you never forget the first one.
No, you never forget the first one. That's true. So tell us, where were you? Were you in Spain? Because you're a very multicultural, multilingual person. You're born in Spain. Your mom is Italian. You grew up in the States. And tell us.
It was in Spain and in Mallorca. And what I used to do, Leila, as long as I can remember, was always go to the record stores. I don't know why and how that passion came, but it was just like on Saturday, I'd say to my mom, I want to go to the record store. And I'd spend hours browsing at the record store and looking at album covers and just listening to music. I loved music. I still love music. Era una pasión, Leila, que I just can't explain it, but it was all part of my life growing up in Spain. So I grew up around, you know, Spanish language music, whether it was Julio Iglesias, Los Chalchaleros, you know, all that great stuff. But for whatever.
But your parents weren't musicians.
They were not musicians.
This was not.
No, they were not musicians. It was just something that was so innate in me. I would listen to the radio stations. We had back then a show from the U.S. called American Top 40. I didn't even really speak English, but I would follow every week the top 40 charts. It was Casey Kasem. So it was something that was so innate. And I just, if I would have known back then, I could have made a career out of it. I would have definitely gone for it. But everything fell by the wayside, because you realize way back in the day, Leila, you couldn't Google, how do I get a job in the music industry? It's just, I thought that this is not real. I need to go and become a banker or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever it is.
So what you did, in fact, was you went to the States, you went to Los Angeles, and you studied communications, correct?
Yeah, well, communications and business, because I always knew that business was the thing to fall back on, Leila, because I didn't know, like I said, that there was a business of entertainment, of music. So then once you're in the U.S., you realize, oh, wow, there is a business around music. There is a business around film, around televisions. I didn't have any friends or relatives or anybody within the music industry. But by chance, I got an internship at CBS, which later became Sony, as a college rep. So my job was to promote college bands. At that time, it was the Psychedelic Furs, it was the Bangles, it was the Red Rockers, all these college bands, promote them all over college radio. The minute I graduated from college, I got a job at CBS, Sony, Epic Records, a product match, marketing. I loved it. Then eventually, of course, you know, other companies start hearing about you. So I went to Capitol Records after 4 or 5 years to do international marketing. I was at Capitol Records in LA for a year and a half, and then MTV called. And at that time, MTV in the early 90s was like saying nowadays Spotify and Facebook and YouTube. It was the biggest thing in the world. MTV called me and said, we're launching an MTV Latin America. Would you like to be a part of it? It was the third MTV that was opening after the US in 81 and Europe in 87. We were the third one. So I came to Miami to be part of the initial launch team, which was like maybe 4 or 5 people, 5 of us. And I was doing programming and music and talent. And then MTV just opened the floodgates to Latin music. I did not grow up with Latin music, like I said. I discovered Latin music, of which one of them was Ricky Martin. I remember when we first played Maria, Leila, I thought, oh, this is a game changer.
So this is fascinating that you started in the label side and not at MTV. I didn't know that. I always wondered how you'd gotten that job at Maverick. Mm-hmm. Now I know. But you had been working in American labels. You go to MTV and then you hear Maria. So let's listen for a minute to Maria.
Uepa! Un, dos, tres, un pasito pa'lante, Maria. Un, dos, tres, un pasito pa' atrás. Uepa!
So this is the remix of Maria. So it's a bilingual version of the song. Was that a thing back then, or was this completely bizarre?
What happened, Leila, was his manager, Angelo Medina, and Ricardo Cordero, and the whole office invited us to see Ricky and when he played La Nueve de Julio in Buenos Aires. 250,000 kids showed up to this free concert, right?
Oh, my God. 250,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Let that sink in.
Yeah, to this day, I have not seen that kind of crowd. And don't forget, Ricky Martin's crowds are fanatics. To see 250,000 Argentinas y Argentinos go crazy for Ricky, you thought, oh, wow, I'm in the presence of greatness. This guy is not what everybody thinks, you know, this pretty boy, one-hit wonder kind of thought. You thought, no, this is the real deal. After that, we programmed. We had to, because the audiences was just screaming, because we were a rock channel, a video rock channel, but they were screaming for Ricky Martin on MTV. So we programmed Maria, the remix video, and it just like exploded on MTV, exploded. And I thought, oh my God. And shortly thereafter, we got Shakira. Right? And it was like, uh-oh, something's brewing in the Latin world. Something's brewing. This is like the mid-90s, 96, 97. And I thought, you know what? It's time for me to leave MTV. I want to do my own thing. I'd been there for 4 years.
So this is before they were recording in English, in other
words. Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And what was the feeling? And because even though you were working for MTV Latin mm-hmm. America, you mm-hmm. were still in the States. So what was kind of the attitude towards Latin music in the States among record executives? Did they think it was quaint? Did they think it was kind of cute? Or did they think it was nothing?
They thought it was interesting. It was that cool conga. Wow. You know, Los Lobos La Bamba. It's like, wow, a one hit wonder here, you know, and it's not. Gloria obviously blew the doors wide open in the early 80s. But at that time with Ricky and Shakira and Enrique, it was still something that the general market was like, still, we don't know. It's very Latin. So what do they have to do? Record in English, right? Ricky recorded in English. Shakira had to come to Miami, work with Emilio and record in English. Enrique had to record in English. So everybody back then had to record in English to cross over.
So you left MTV because you saw an opportunity for yourself in the Latin market, or because you wanted to go back to rock and roll?
I saw an opportunity, Leila. I worked with Enrique as well, and I knew Shakira. I knew, obviously, Gloria and Emilio, and I thought, there's something here. I don't know what it is. And it reminded me of when I was a little boy that I knew I wanted it, but I didn't know how to get there. But I thought, there's something happening because these artists are real. They're selling out stadiums outside the United States. The demographic, the Latin demographic in the United States was growing. So I thought, algo, something's happening here. So I left MTV, consulted with EMI Publishing to open their Latin America office. So in the process, we signed Alejandro Sanz, we signed Maná, we signed Enrique. And I started consulting with Ricky, consulting with Enrique, consulting with all these different artists till Madonna called.
So Madonna called. Had you met Madonna before?
I never met Madonna, but what happened was they were interested in Enrique, because Enrique at that time was, and she had just released what probably is still to date her best-selling and most critically acclaimed album, Ray of Light. She just released that in 98, but she was passionate about Latin music because she was living in Miami, and she just loved Latin music. To this day, she loves Latin music. You saw the cover of Rolling Stone with her and Maluma and the duet they've done, so she's yes. really genuinely passionate about Latin music. So her and her manager called, and they were like, we want to get into the Latin business. We want to open a Maverick Latin operation. And, you know, you might be the guy for us. And I thought, wow, the opportunity to go back to a label working for Madonna, Guy, and the team was something I could not pass up, because when I realized how much of a visionary Madonna was and how much she got the business, I thought, wow, I can learn a lot from her. And I did. Those four years that I was at Maverick, I learned a ton.
So what happened with Maverick? I mean, we were in the middle of the so-called Latin explosion, mm-hmm. but then things didn't, I mean, some things worked, some things didn't quite work. What was the big obstacle? Do you find that the two markets were just too different?
It's a combination of that. It was the perfect storm, Leila. A couple things. Number one, we signed three artists, Moreno, Nicole, and Jose Padilla of Café del Mar, and that was thanks to Madonna. The three were nominated for Latin Grammys the first year out. So we had, off the gate, three Latin Grammy nominations, of which one of them won, Moreno, Best New Artist. But the problem was that year when we launched Maverick in 2000 was when Napster was also launched. And that was the beginning of the end. I remember sitting in these corporate meetings with lawyers, with Warner lawyers from across the company, all the various labels, and they say, we're going to sue Napster out of existence. We're going to sue them. And I thought, oh my God, you know, lawsuits never end well. And that was the beginning of the record business cratering when we were launching this label with these artists. And also, Leila, honestly, joint ventures are very hard to work because you have so many different bosses, so many different entities, and so many different political affiliations you have to navigate. We were a joint venture with Warner Music Latina. So we had to deal with Warner Latina. At that time, it was George Zamora, who was actually an ally of ours. But it's different. Their priorities were different than our priorities. We were more into the Latin alternative scene. At that time, Huella Latina was very much into pop. So there were so many things.
You were more a boutique label, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But that was, so Bruno, that was 20 years ago. I mean, it's yeah. hard to yeah. imagine, but yeah. it was. And now that you're an agent at CAA, do you find that the more things change, maybe the more they remain the same? What do people still not understand about Latin music and the Latin music marketplace?
I still think the general market has not really grasped how big the Latin market really is and how global it is and how Latin music, Leila, is loved, admired, and listened to globally. I was in, you know, to fast forward, I was in Saudi Arabia 2 years ago with Maluma. He was like the second Latin artist who ever performed there after Enrique Iglesias. It was a stadium show of 35,000 Saudi Arabian kids. Not a lot of them spoke English, but everybody sang along to Maluma's music. It was mind-blowing.
In Spanish.
In Spanish. And these are Saudis, Arabes. And then I remember backstage talking to a lot of the support staff who were from North Africa and the African countries from Mali, Mauritania, Chad. And they were all massive Latin fans, did not speak Spanish, not even English, but they're like, oh, Nicky Jam, oh, Balvin, oh, Shakira. I was like, wow, you realize globally. And I saw that with Ricky when we'd go to India and Turkey and Malaysia. Latin music is global, Leila. There is no doubt about that. And sometimes I think the general market does not recognize or does not realize how global our music and our culture is.
But you could argue that American music is also global, yes?
Yes, but Americans basically invented it, invented the modern music business. So absolute Anglo-Saxon, you know, Americans and Brits are always the default artist everywhere. It's always the glue that holds everything together. But when you think about where we've come in the last 20 years, Leila, oh my God, leaps and bounds. When Bad Bunny says, I don't need to record in English, it's a strong statement. And he is the biggest artist by far Latin globally and one of the biggest just overall right now. And he doesn't want to record in English.
So what you're saying is that beside English, the other global music right now is Latin music or music in Spanish.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, obviously, K-pop is huge, but it doesn't have the bandwidth. It doesn't have the reach that our music has. Look at the global top 50 Spotify playlist any given week, and there are five Latin or Spanish language songs in the top 10. YouTube's every year in the last couple of years, the most viewed videos are always, you know, Latins, or at least in the top three, top five. Always. It's consistent now.
So, Bruno, after you did Maverick, mm-hmm. And after Maverick shut down, basically, you know, after this mm-hmm. was a tough time for mm-hmm. the entire industry, not just for Latin music. Then you went on to manage Ricky, and then you went on to CAA. So what have the challenges been? Because we sometimes talk about this, about convincing people that this is a viable business. Did you have that challenge, and do you still have it now?
Well, I'll tell you, with Ricky, it was a dream. I didn't want to be Ricky's manager. It just happened. And when I fully became his manager, I thought, okay, now we have to basically make Ricky the global icon that he was back in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, because I started managing him in 2004. I was there till 2014. So the first thing we did was an Unplugged. We kind of re-engineered everything, and we worked with Jose Tillan and the folks at MTV and did an Unplugged. And that basically solidified Ricky's iconic, you know, stature globally, right? Same thing with CAA. It was like, okay, how do we convince the agency and the general market that there is something real, something viable here in music touring, brands, television, film, books, you know, sports and everything else? It's always been my role to be the ambassador or the bridge between both worlds. I always say I'm the bridge between the Anglo world and the Latin world. Anglos going to the Latin world and Latins coming into the Anglo world. So soy el puente.
So when they called you from CAA, I know CAA reps huge Latin artists. In fact, they were very much at the forefront of this. You know, they rep Ricky, they rep Shakira, but they didn't have a Latin agent, did they?
No, they didn't have a specialized Latin agent. And I remember a couple months after joining CAA, I ran into Walter Colm at an event, and he says, I have this young kid. I want you to look at him and possibly work with him. And who was that young kid? Obviously, Maluma. So the advantage of me being on the ground here was that I could talk to Juan Diego about Nicky Jam or Fonseca directly about himself or, you know, Pablo Alborán or whatever. I always said when I joined CAA, I need to be based in Miami because Miami is the capital of Latin music, the capital of Latin entertainment. And that's the only way I'm going to be able to find and sign clients. Being out there talking to the labels, to the publishers, to the managers, to everybody, the producers, and hanging out at studios. And it's worked out well.
It always surprises me that it's taken this long, right? And that there aren't too many people like you. Well, now there are in other agencies, yeah. but I would dare say that for years, really, there weren't until relatively recently. You were kind of the only one. Well, Michelle Vega was at William Morris back then, but he left. But in other agencies, really, there wasn't a specialized Latin music person, at least not someone who spoke Spanish. How important is it to have someone who speaks the two languages?
Leila, it is a requirement to work here at with me to speak Spanish, because a lot of our clients don't speak English. A lot of the contracts we do with Colombia, with Mexico, are in Spanish. So you have to be able to read Spanish. You have to be able to speak Spanish. You know very well all the managers who don't speak English. And it's so important going forward to be able to speak Spanish, because don't forget, we have a market of 440 million people south of the border, and everything is done in Spanish down there.
Because on the one hand, we're telling the American or the mainstream market, you know, you have to have people who speak Spanish, you have to understand the culture. Conversely, ¿qué tenemos que hacer nosotros to be more a part of the global music business?
I think what we have to do is understand that the American way of working is different than ours, that a yes for the Americans is a yes. It's not the maybe. I always say to my colleagues, you know, when we say yes, 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 sometimes we mean, yeah, we're listening to you. Yeah, yeah, we hear you. But are we going to do it? We don't know. So it's, you know, the American way of working, which we all admire and respect and really strive for, is the way to go, I guess, globally. Nothing is personal in the U.S. You can't take anything personal. It is what it is. It's business. Y eso, para eso los americanos son los mejores. And they'll tell you it's not personal. It's just business. So that's what we have to learn. I think our skin has to get a little thicker. And I think that's really key. It helped me early on in my career. I realized nothing is personal in this business.
So right now you are, tell me who your clients are now at CAA.
So we work with Maluma, we work with Lunay, we work with Dana Paola from Mexico. We're working with Luis Fonsi, obviously, Ednita, who, as you know, is one of my favorite of all time, because I've known her, you know, as long as I've known Ricky, because she was managed by Angelo Medina. Obviously, we work with Ricky, work with Enrique, work with Emilio and Gloria, who are the most wonderful people in the world, because I've known them for so long. I've known them longer than I've been at CAA, and we're working with a lot of developing artists as well. Yendri, Dominican Girl. So we have a pretty strong roster right now.
And do you find when you're signing artists, is there a difference between the way that your signings were perceived 10 years ago or even 5 years ago and the way they're perceived today? Have you noticed a shift in the way you do business in and out of the company?
Absolutely. I started in CA 8.5 years ago, and it was a lot of knocking doors across the agency, because there's over, you know, several hundred agents and there's offices everywhere. Now I'm still knocking on doors, as you always do, but it's easier to open them and it's easier to get a return phone call. It's easier to get engagements, but that's across the board as well. When I call the television networks or when I call the record labels or whatever it is, it's a lot easier now because they realize, oh, wow, this is a very, very important demographic and a very important segment of the American consumer we have to take care of.
So Bruno, can you give me an example of a deal you've closed recently that you don't think you could have closed a few years ago?
I'll tell you.
That's kind of a tough question.
It is, but you know, the one I'm really proud of, Leila, is the Gloria Estefan movie deal, which if you can give me a minute, I'll explain. So Gloria has been offered hundreds of movie roles in the last 20 years since she did the movie opposite Meryl Streep. She said no because she was just not interested. Finally, I get a call from Brad Pitt's producing partner at Plan B. They said, we're doing a remake of Father of the Bride, but this time it's a Latin cast, Latin writers, everything else, Latin directors. We'd like to have Gloria, we'd like to offer her the role. I said, she's not going to read for it. You either offer it or you don't. They said, no, we're ready to offer her the role of Ingrid, the wife, the mother, of the daughter who gets married.
Is it hard to say something like that? She's not going to read for it. You either offer it or you don't.
But because that was always the point, where we always got all these, you know, scripts and it's like, can Gloria read for this? Can Gloria read for that? I was like, well, you know, she doesn't really have the time to be auditioning right now, right? Plus, it's got to be a role that she really, really loves. So they sent me the script. I read it really fast. I thought, wow, this is an awesome, awesome script. And it's a real funny, but it doesn't like make fun of Latins. I sent it to Emilio and Gloria. Emilio responded when, you know, like he always does in a couple of hours. He read it. He goes, I love it. You know, wait till Gloria gets back to you. She gets back to me the next day. She goes, I love it. The only problem is we're shooting Red Table Talk season 2 at the same time this movie's supposed to be shooting. So, but I really want to do it. So the mountain was, okay, how do we move Red Table Talk in order to accommodate the film? And how do we make both things happen? Because Gloria wanted them to do it. And it worked out. She's been amazing in the movie. The movie comes out in spring, but the reaction from the cast, from the producer, from the director has been phenomenal. It's her, Andy Garcia, Adri Arjona is playing the daughter, Diego Boneta's in the movie playing the boyfriend. So it's a great cast. And to have Gloria come back to acting theatrical after 20 years, oh my God, I feel so proud and so honored to have been a part of that and to have made it happen.
And I, not that long ago, I was talking with Nikki Jam, who is your client or has been your client. And we were talking about his roles in film. And I remember he said something that really stuck with me. He said, people always talk about my roles in film as if it were perfectly normal for some Puerto Rican who's, you know, to have roles in film along Vin Diesel. And they don't realize like this is really not common, you know, it's very unusual to go to a movie and see yourself in that movie when you're Latin, Bruno. So do you think that this is one of the big barriers that you're breaking down right now, that it's not just in music, but you're paving the way in these other mediums?
Yes, and to be honest with you, Leila, since I was at MTV for 5 years and I learned television and I supervised soundtracks as well back then, it is something I've always said to our clients. I don't only do touring. I want to make sure our clients have those opportunities to do television, scripted television, or to do film, because I think that's the way to go. It's like they have to diversify their careers, just like a financial analyst diversifies your portfolio. They have to diversify. It's like, you know, touring, releasing music, television, film, brands, everything else. That's the purpose of an agency, that if we do our job right.
Now, who is your perfect client? What do you look for in a client?
It's somebody who certainly attends to the opportunities right away. Porque no se presentan dos veces. Opportunities don't knock twice. And somebody who's really professional. And I'll go back to Ricky. You know, when Ricky decides to sign on a project, he's the first one on set. He's the first one there and the last one to leave, and he gives it his all. We really need that because everybody else is doing the same thing. So the least you can do is, you know, put in that effort that everybody else is doing. So I love working. Maluma's another one, by the way, who when he commits to something, he's there from the get-go. And we love that. Those are the kind of clients I want, not the flaky ones.
Well, I hear a lot. Some people say that Latin artists are becoming so big so fast, especially the young ones, that they don't quite understand the work that needs to be put. Do you find that to be true? Or on the contrary, do you find that your young artists are perhaps more galvanized than ever?
It's a combination. So I think it's easier to make music now. So whereas before you had the gatekeepers, so, and not everybody could record an album before, now it's easier. The one worry I have, Leila, is because of streaming and video views, a lot of artists, the young artists, think that because they have several hundred million, you know, streams or views, that they can go out and sell concert tickets. Because at the end, the barometer is selling concert tickets.
People talk about the hundreds of millions of streams, but at the end of the day, there's a big difference between a stream and a ticket, correct?
Absolutely. It does not translate. You know, it's obviously if you're Maluma or Benito or Ozuna, it's a different story, but a lot of the younger artists have tremendous social media footprints because they're also engaged on social media 24/7. But it's the real question is, will you be able to sell concert tickets? Will you be able to do a tour, a real tour, you know, a genuine tour where you sell concert tickets, you go from city to city? And the other thing is your expenses. Can you get on a bus and do, for example, what Ricky did, first couple of tours was on a bus, right? From city to city to city. He still does the bus thing. Or do you expect to fly private plane from city to city? So those are a lot of questions that we have to talk to, because don't forget the budgets and the production budgets are limited when you're a developing artist, and the money is not where it's at if you're starting out. versus if you're, you know, Luis Miguel or Chayanne or Ricky or Enrique.
How about musically? What is the last signing where you went to see an artist, you got excited and you said, my God, I gotta sign this artist, even though they only have one song out?
Yendri. Yendri was the last one where I thought, what the hell is this about? She is incredible. She's left of center, Afro-Dominicana, but raised in Italy. She's got the European musical essence. And I thought, oh, wow, signing developing artists as an agent, it's hard, Leila, because we're not a record label, we're not a management company, we're not a promotion company, we're a publicist. You have to really picar piedra. But Yandri was the last one where I thought, wow, this is incredible. And you feel like you're attracted to that artist because you think, I want to know more about the artist. I want to find a way to work with this artist. So that's what I look for when I sit down with new artists.
So Bruno, you were saying just now that the real revenue and the real value of an artist is in the touring. So I am going to assume, I think correctly, that touring is your big bread and butter. But it also feels to me from hearing you speak today that all these other new revenue streams have opened for Latin artists. So what big revenue do you see that wasn't there 10 years ago for your Latin artists specifically?
Well, obviously, Leila, the low-hanging fruit is certainly brands and consumer products. Latin artists are right now the kind of artists that brands want. We're doing a lot of these consumer deals where not only are you endorsing a brand, but you're also creating a brand, a clothing line. We're doing this huge deal with Maluma that he announced last week or 2 weeks ago with Macy's. So those are the kind of things where going forward, Latin artists are taking advantage of. And I think they're borrowing a page from the hip-hop world where they look at the hip-hop artists who became cottage industries and the music's just a part of what they are and who they are. And Latin artists are looking at them and like, I want to be the next Kanye. I want to be the next Wiz Khalifa, or the next Dr. Dre, or the next Jay-Z. And that's where we're headed at with Latin as well.
And what are the challenges, Bruno? Everybody speaks about this as such an exploding segment. Is there anything we should be concerned about?
You know, our business lives on hype, but at the same time, we have to be very careful to taper those expectations. You know, we're still growing. You mentioned it with the streaming numbers. We're still growing. There's still room to grow, a lot of room to grow. We have to pace ourselves with that and not just overdo it. But it's always, you know, you can't assume the market's going to want what you give them all the time. Because audiences now, Leila, are so fickle. They are so well-versed and so, you know, into everything that you have to really give them credit for being a lot smarter than we sometimes give them credit for.
And Bruno, what is your superpower?
My superpower, Leila, is probably trying to have the best attitude every morning when I wake up. Because every day you get beat up, Leila. Every single, there isn't a day when you don't get beat up. And I can show you my scars, and my skin is as thick as a snake's, and I have scars.
Tengo cicatrices por todas partes. And I have to say, tengo que interrumpir porque Bruno is like the most even-keeled. Es el hombre de mejor genio que conozco. You know, y me llam, like you will call me and I'll be in a terrible mood, and Bruno is always in a good mood. So this is the superpower.
That's a superpower. Yep, definitely.
Entonces, how do you do that? Like, what's your superpower routine? How do you keep that attitude?
Leila, you know what it is? Every morning, it's an attitude of gratitude. Attitude of gratitude for me, porque me levanto and I think, well, I'm alive, okay? So I already won. I have health. I have, you know, 10 toes, 10 fingers. I can smell, I can taste, I can do this. And that's already, for me, una ganancia. I won already. And then to be able to do what I love, which is this job, I think, wow, I'm really lucky to be doing this. So with that attitude of gratitude, I already feel like I won for the day. The rest, yeah, there'll be ups and downs and, you know, peaks and valleys. But I already feel like, okay, I'm good.
So you say you have these scars. What do you do when you get a really bad one? When you get like a really terrible beating and you're bleeding in the ground?
A day or two later, after I've gotten massively beat up, I think, all right, how do we turn this into a lesson and into something that's going to be a win for me eventually, right? So I do. And just now, instead of stewing on the loss or the fight or whatever it was, then I think, okay, how do I turn this to my advantage? How do we turn this into a winning situation? And then I just spend all my energy thinking, how do I turn this into a winning, and how do I turn this setback into a winning situation? And it always, you always, the answers are always within you, Leila. If you really look and really dig deep and you listen to your heart or whatever it is, it's not tacky, it's not a Hallmark card. The answers are always within you. Para mí, at least that's how it always works. And I'll stew for a minute and I'll be like, oh God, this is the end of the world. And then I'll like, okay, Bruno, just go within, listen to your heart and the answers within you. Y Leila, te lo juro por Dios, it's always within you.
Can you give me an example, a concrete example of something that went terribly wrong for you and you moved past it, and something that was a tremendous success for you and really kind of defined your career?
I'll go back to Maverick. So the tremendous loss was when we had to shut down the company because Napster, because of everything. And I thought, oh my God, this is the first time I'm going to be unemployed. This is the first time I've ever lost a job, because not because of my own fault. It was because the market was just cratered. And I thought, what do I do now?
And it's not just a job. You were the freaking president of a record label.
President, exactly. I was a partner. I was a president. I was like, oh my God, this is the end of my career, sin querer queriendo, right? I had nothing to do with it.
Te sirvieron el postre y después te lo quitaron before you could dive in.
Exactamente. And I thought, how do I turn this around? How do I turn this around? And at that time, we were talking to Ricky, and I thought, okay, Bruno, you know what? You focus on working with Ricky. That's it. This is it. Laser focus on working with Ricky, and things will turn around. And sure enough, it was like, how do I focus on doing the best possible job? So Ricky says, you know, I really need you on my team. And look at what happened, Leila. 10 years managing Ricky Martin. 10 years as a manager, Leila, that's a lifetime. Not a lot of managers last that long. So I turned that real depressing loss into a win. And it was an amazing win, which, you know, I am still Ricky's agent. And we still talk all the time, Ricky, Jose, Rebecca, everybody else. But it was one of those where I thought, how do I get out of this deep black hole, this funk of losing our record company, and turn this into a win? And it sure happened.
That was beautiful, Bruno. De verdad, congrats. It's easy to forget what has happened once you see someone like coasting. But now we know you don't coast. You get scars every day. So before we go, I'd like to ask my victims here on Latin Hitmaker my rapid questions. So are you ready for my rapid questions?
I'm ready.
I got to say, this is my favorite one. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of failure. But it really, if fear is a general thing, because it always leads, in my case, to anger. Anger leads to hate, and hate leads to suffering. And I was like, but I'm really afraid of failure because I don't like it. I live with it, but I don't like it.
What did you buy with your first big paycheck?
I bought a car back then, you know, back in the 80s. Everybody wanted a BMW 318 and I needed to have one. So that was the first purchase.
¿En qué te gastas demasiado tu dinero?
En viajes. Always traveling to all these far-flung places. In Madagascar, he estado en Oman, he estado en Zanzibar. It's like all these places that I love that are off the beaten path.
¿Cuál es tu vicio secreto? And it could be from watching bad sitcoms late at night to eating chocolate in the morning, no sé.
It's like, Leila, you know me as a health freak. Complete health nut, exercising, but at night, oh my God, a bowl of Cocoa Pebbles or Lucky Charms. Oh my God, I can eat the whole box of Lucky Charms or Cocoa Pebbles or, you know, those real sugary cereals. I love that.
Your most prized possession?
It's families of photos of my family. I mean, thank God my family's still, everybody's alive and healthy, but it's always when I look at the photos of my entire family, I think, oh wow, I'm a lucky man. I have a beautiful family, I have a wonderful family. And you know, you pray every day, you think, just give them health. That's all I ask for. Pero that's the most prized possession.
And now I'm going to ask you a tough one, but be truthful. Which artist is the one who got away that you really wish you would have signed and you didn't?
Benito. We almost had him. No secret there, Leila. Benito.
Well, you never know, Bruno, right?
Exactly. If Noah's listening, You know, listen, I admire Noah tremendously, tremendously. He is the future of our business, among with the other, you know, Rebecca, Edgar Andino, Andy Martinez, Walter. They're amazing. But Noah's done incredible stuff out of the island. And, you know, it's always hard to work out of the island, based out of the island. I love the island more than anything. Pero it's an amazing job what they've done globally.
It's been such a pleasure to have you here in Latin Hitmaker. We look forward to Father of the Bride, Latino style. We look forward to Ednita. We look forward to seeing Ricky on tour now with Enrique and his new fabulous skincare line. And thank you so much, Bruno del Granado, CAA agent extraordinaire.
Thank you for having me, Leila. It's always a pleasure talking to you and exchanging thoughts. And you know I love you.